You're with SBS Radio. Find more great stories in your language at sbs.com.au.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are a priority group when it comes to rolling out the COVID-19 vaccine, which will start next month across the nation. So, how will the rollout work? And just how prepared are our Indigenous communities if there was to be an outbreak of COVID-19 in community? I'm Kerry Lee Harding, and this is the NITV podcast.
People across the world, including thousands of First Nations people in places like United States and Canada. So it's definitely a safe vaccine, and the more we can arm ourselves in the community with correct information and not false information, helps address some of the anxiousness and the hesitancy that is out there.
You just heard there from Jason Agostino, medical advisor with NACHO, also known as the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, and he's also a lecturer at the Australian National University.
We're working to make sure all of our Aboriginal health services that want to roll out the vaccine can. What that's involved in the first stage has been putting out a call to all our health services and asking for some information from them to make sure that they're vaccine ready come mid to late March, as well as just answering a lot of questions that different health services have and working with the Australian government to produce frequently asked questions and communication materials for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples.
So, what challenges are involved in such a big rollout of the COVID-19 vaccine across the nation for our Indigenous community members?
To start off with, it's just been about the logistics of, when is the vaccine going to come? What is the training requirements? One of the big first challenges that we had to address was to make sure that remote area nurses and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health practitioners could provide the vaccine, even if a doctor wasn't on site. So there was some concern initially that they wouldn't be allowed to do that, even though they are able to provide other vaccines. But we've been able to work with the Australian government and clarify that, whatever laws relate to current vaccination also apply to COVID-19 vaccine. So it's been largely about that. Everyone's just keen to get the vaccine out. We're hugely experienced in giving vaccines to communities. I've got really high coverage of flu vax last year and really high coverage of under 5 vaccinations for our kids. So everyone's just ready to get the COVID-19 vaccine out there.
In 2020, special pandemic training was delivered to more than 70,000 Indigenous health workers and practitioners to help protect remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities from COVID-19.
If there was an outbreak in community, how we could work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health workers and health practitioners to do contact tracing and for the, just figure out who had been a close contact and to provide advice around isolation for people that have been in contact. So that was a module that we developed with the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander Health Unit at the Australian National University, and it had really high uptake. We weren't expecting, I think it's up to 70,000 people to do it, but I think there was a lot of useful information in there in language that was easy to understand instead of epidemiological jargon. So I think it resonated with a lot of people.
It would be absolutely devastating for community mob if the COVID-19 virus was to break out in our remote Indigenous communities here in Australia. And Jason Agostino says the community have been successful by keeping COVID-19 out of our remote regions.
Yeah, definitely. That's always been the concern. You know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people have a higher number of people with the chronic conditions that we know can cause severe COVID-19. So things like diabetes and heart disease and renal disease and lung disease. There's a larger amount of the population has these conditions, and often these conditions start, you know, up to 20 years earlier than what we see in non-Indigenous Australians. So really concerned about the consequences if it got into the population because of that, and also because, you know, unfortunately people are still more likely to live in crowded homes, and we know that in crowded homes COVID-19 spreads more quickly. So it's been amazing that, you know, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community has been so successful in keeping it out. You know, so far, you know, we're almost a year into the pandemic in Australia, and we've only had 151 cases across all of Australia, and we've had no deaths, which is a great achievement.
So, just how long will the vaccine rollout take to be complete across our Indigenous communities in Australia?
Look, the process to vaccinate the whole of the Australian population is expected to go for the most of this year, you know, all the way through till springtime. You know, in terms of getting it out to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities and Aboriginal health services, you know, we're expecting that to start in March, but, you know, the vaccination effort to go for a couple of months once it's there. You know, aside from just the one dose of COVID-19 vaccine, it's important that people get a second dose. And for the AstraZeneca vaccine, which is the one that will be rolled out through general practice, those two doses are probably best if they're given 12 weeks apart. So it's a long haul. And, you know, getting in the whole of the population a number of times is going to be a challenge.
So, what do we need to do as Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people to prepare when it comes to the rolling out of COVID-19 vaccine?
Look, I think it's just to stay in tune with what's happening at your local health service. They'll probably be calling and making sure your details are up to date in the health service, because they'll probably be putting out recalls and telling people in their community when they want different groups to come in. And the second thing is really just to make sure everyone is aware of the facts around the vaccination. I think there's a lot of misinformation floating around about it, and but, you know, this is a vaccine vaccines that have now been given to over 200 million people across the world, including thousands of First Nations people in places like you know, United States and Canada. So it's definitely a safe vaccine, and you know, the more we can arm ourselves in the community with correct information and not false information, is, you know, helps address some of the anxiousness and the hesitancy that is out there. Over the next few weeks, I think we'll see a lot of things come out of different local Aboriginal health services. I think, you know, at the moment there are some materials on the Australian government website that are about the vaccine that are targeted for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people. But, you know, what the success of COVID-19 response was, I think, local services and local community groups creating their own information based on that. And in the next few weeks, as we build up to that vaccine, I think we'll be seeing more and more information coming out from those health services that'll be more tailored to the community. So just keep an eye out for what's coming out and read it. And if you've got any concerns, then, you know, now's the time to start coming into your health service to have a chat to either the health workers, the nurses or the doctors about it.
Alison Wright is a research associate at the Australian National University and says Indigenous communities are well prepared for COVID-19 vaccine rollout.
So our work is all about preparedness at this stage. Fortunately, we've had no outbreaks in remote Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities of COVID-19, but it's being prepared and getting on the front foot. So we've developed a series of modules that are online and that we also run as face-to-face workshops to support Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health practitioners and health workers, both to understand the epidemiology of COVID-19, but also to assist in contact tracing. They're learning firstly about the epidemiology of COVID-19, how it's transmitted, what are the main common symptoms, and all of those help you to understand COVID-19 in a general sense around its epidemiology and what are the most effective control mechanisms. Now, we've just had, obviously, the vaccination program about to start, but those control mechanisms of, you know, social distancing and hand hygiene and the 1.5 metres physical distancing were and will remain important even despite the vaccination. So all of those control measures that we use here in Australia and that are used internationally. And then we go into why we do contract tracing, how it might look particularly in a remote community. So there's some different circumstances in remote communities that might make it look a little bit different to how a public health unit might go about contract tracing when they're doing it in an urban area, because in an urban area it is totally relying on the phone lines and contact tracers will sit usually in a big office and ring out to people who are in close contact with a positive COVID-19 case. And then they'll direct them or ask them to go into quarantine. So we know that we can reduce the transmission of COVID-19 if we not only isolate people who are current cases, but if we also isolate or quarantine the people who have been in contact with that case of COVID-19, that person infected with COVID-19.
Alison Wright says when it comes to contract tracing, things are done very differently in remote parts of Australia compared to metropolitan areas.
I mean, I guess one of the simple, most logistic things that make it challenging in remote areas is that we can't always rely on phone to do contact tracing. So some communities are still not connected to mobiles. So they don't have mobile reception. And even if they do have mobile reception, it can be haphazard in terms of people who have mobiles and people who have telephones. And generally in remote areas, landlines are minimal as well. So the first thing is that it has to be done face-to-face. And we believe that the best way that it can be done is by using local people to do that contact tracing, people who have an understanding of the community. In many remote communities, English is not a first or even a second language. It might be a third or fourth language. So doing it in local language, Walpiri, Aranda, Amadjara, are very common languages where I speak, where I live. And also just understanding those kind of cultural considerations and some of those sensitivities when you're doing contact tracing is also really important. So often culturally it's not appropriate for a very young woman to talk to a senior man, and if they do talk to a senior man, it's often appropriate for his wife to be present and for the questions to go through the wife. So all of those considerations are things that local people know best, and local people know their community more than anyone. And we know, even from our experience in the Victorian outbreak, that at the start they had centralised all of their public health response, and that meant that the contact traces were centralised as well. And they soon learned that decentralising contact traces into involving local, what they call local hubs, so setting up local hubs to do contact tracing, was actually much more effective than centralising the services, because local people know their community better than anybody else. So when you talk about where you've been in the last 2 days, which is all about what contact tracers are doing, they're trying to establish who people have been in contact with and also where they've been. You know, where have they been to the childcare? Have they picked up their children from school? Have they attended a cafe? Where have they been shopping? All of those nuances in local communities, and understanding, you know, what even street names or community names, it's useful to have an understanding of that local context when you're doing contact tracing. That's why it's shown, you know, not just in the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, but everywhere, that local people involved in contact tracing helps to do the job much more effectively.
I know in the city, us mob have been provided at different venues we go to with QR codes to sign in before we enter a cafe, for example. I guess this is something that's not used in regional and remote communities, or is it?
That's a good question. It may potentially in some of the bigger communities, but generally not in your smaller communities, because we have no mobile reception. So you do see occasionally in some areas the kind of manual processing of that, so people might sign in. But it is, you know, it is slightly more haphazard, that whole process of the QR coding.
I'm wondering, what has it been like for you, Alison, personally, to be working on this project over the last several months or more?
I think, it's been really enjoyable to see it. I think, you know, it's important for COVID, but it can be important for any infectious disease contact tracing. So understanding the basics of contact tracing will be useful for a whole range of outbreaks. And we've had now 90,000 participants online doing the online courses. So it really means that there is some good local knowledge out there in places that really need it if we ever did have an outbreak.
And let's hope that doesn't happen, but it wouldn't be a good thing if we do have a COVID-19 outbreak in our regional or remote Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander communities, right?
That's right. I mean, we know that that COVID-19 is more severe in people that have existing comorbidities and also our elderly population. And for the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander population, unfortunately, due to inequities and inequalities in our system, they're some of the highest population in terms of those existing comorbidities, diabetes, renal failure, are more prevalent in those communities, unfortunately.
Is there anything else we should be talking about or you'd like to mention while we have you on the line, Alison?
I think only that, you know, the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander health services across Australia, those community controlled services, have all been at kind of the front line in terms of advocating, but also dealing with COVID-19 in terms of getting their communities prepared and aware of the risks. So I think they deserve a good pat on the back, because they have been some of the strongest advocates, both for early preparedness, but also having those plans in place if an outbreak did occur.
Well, that is all for this episode of our NITV podcast series. Thank you to our guests today, Alison Wright, Research Associate at the Australian National University, and Jason Agostino, Medical Advisor with NACHO, also known as the National Aboriginal Community Controlled Health Organisation, and he's also a lecturer at the Australian National University. And you can listen to our other NITV podcasts like Take It Black and Ballin' Out. Just go to where you get your podcasts from.
Want to hear more stories like this? Listen on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.